have multiple Googles up. I need one Google up.
One there Google. We
go. Hashtag one vice.
All right. We remember one vice here on the safe room.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Safe Room Podcast, a survival horror game club podcast. I am Rose, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Grace.
Hi!
Do you want to see a ghost?
Yeah, I fucking do! Okay. I guess we'll see. I did just finish this last night. I mean, I played the last half hour of it. Last night?
I did as well.
And this might be one of the best games ever.
Hmm. Okay. All right.
Listen.
It's definitely one of the scariest games we've played for this.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it scared me as much as it scared you.
It got under my skin. Definitely less so as it went on, because the game is too long. But the first half is really scary, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Third Fatal Frame. I'm glad we took a break, because I don't think I would like it as much if we played it straight after two.
It really is. I mean, I think it's structurally, I think it has some big experimental ideas.
Yeah.
In it. But in terms of, like, the bones of the thing, it is exactly the same. Which is, you know, not necessarily bad, but is definitely, like, a little tough to do right after, you know?
Yeah. And where I have to link this. I have to link this in the show notes. There's a fucking insane post on the PlayStation blog for when they brought this to the PlayStation 3 store as like a ROM, like the PS2 Classics thing. And it's the series director, Makoto Shibata.
Yes.
And he talks about making this game. And the first thing he says is like, hey, the PS3 was launching, and so we wanted to make like a compilation game for the PS2 and have it be like the capper on like the Fatal Frame games for PS2. And then goes on to explain sort of the origins of this game. And it explains so much about Fatal Frame as a series.
Well, it's also very like him like being like, this fucked up thing happened to me as a kid. And that's in the video game.
Yeah.
You know?
It's that like...
Yeah, it's very like Stephen King talking about seeing someone get run over by a train, right? Like, yeah.
Yes. It's very... Yeah, I was gonna say the David Lynch story of him like seeing a naked woman while bruised in the street or whatever.
Oh my God, I don't think I've heard this one. Woof.
Yeah.
Well... I suppose that does explain some David Lynch stuff, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a crazy post. And then at the end of it, it's like, hey, download Fatal Frame 3.
Yeah, the line that really jumped out to me is, I know that to create a horror game is to play a game of chicken with suicide.
That goes hard.
Well, it is what the game is about, right?
Yeah.
Is like literally, it's like how far can you go into grief before wanting to die yourself, right? Is like the main question of the video game. But yeah, it's pretty. I mean, it's worth reading. I think it's interesting. It is also just like very unhinged.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the because this the Dream Mansion in this, what a fucking cool ass idea. And that comes from his dreams too. It's like being at this weird manor with snow falling all around and a funeral happening. It's like his funeral and stuff. Anyway, wild.
Yeah.
Well, should we try and summarize this bad boy?
Yeah. Let's see. Do you want to try to summarize it or do you want me to?
I can go. I can at least start here.
Okay.
I mean, kind of what Rose said earlier, the game is a compilation game in some ways. It is a capper on Fatal Frame in that it is a sequel to both Fatal Frame 1 and Fatal Frame 2, although more Fatal Frame 1. But the main character of this is a new person, Ray Kurosawa, whose fiance Yu dies in a car crash before the game starts. And she begins to be haunted by this mysterious tattooed woman who's covered in blue tattoos, and then is also waking up from nightmares where she visits a strange ancient manor with, she says bruise, because I don't think she can see it because it's just on her back. But eventually it becomes clear that she has like these blue tattoos that are, and every night they kind of go more through her body. She lives with Miku from Fatal Frame 1. And they're lesbians together, maybe? Question mark. And
I think they're too sad about the boys in their life to.
Right, that's true. And you know she's, and you know similarly, like her brother died at the end of Fatal Frame 1, like stayed behind, right? And she has also been having dreams to visit that manor, and she discovers, Ray discovers additionally that Yu's friend and like colleague, what's this guy's name? I'm forgetting. Kai.
Yeah,
that's right. Kai. Has also been having these dreams, and he's the older brother of the two sisters from Fatal Frame 2. So the game structure is mostly you play as Ray, but you additionally play as these two other characters and explore this manner of sleep. And basically, like, it's a little complicated. There's also multiple tellings of this sort of central story. So it gets, you know, this is one of the things I really like about it, is that it's so layered, and there's something kind of literary about how it sort of looks at the same events through multiple lenses, right? It's really cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so basically a chosen priestess gets tattooed with, like symbols of people's grief, which are usually animals of various kinds, and then she is like staked in a secret chamber below the earth to like trap the grief there. And so, you know, the like survivors are sort of free from their pain, and she like stays below. But this woman, who's also Reika, right? So there's like an echo there.
Yeah.
Haunts the shrine.
Also voiced by the same voice actress as Ray.
Oh, okay, cool. So both Kai and Miku kind of succumb. The additional thing that's going on here is that they keep seeing the ghosts of their loved ones. And there's sort of a thing where if you follow the ghost to the afterlife, you vanish. Right? It's very pulsey. And they leave behind the, like, you know, imprint. Right? So both of them kind of succumb to that, and Ray defeats Reika. It also turns out that Reika was in love with this man who was banished from the manor, Kaname, who like broke into the shrine and went back down to the like bottom, like the abyss where, you know, they impale Reika to rescue her, and then was murdered by like the head priestess. And that's what like caused her to go mad. And so Ray kind of, you know, defeats Reika with the camera obscura and lifts the curse and then allows the spirits trapped in the Manor of Sleep to depart to the afterlife. And then there's this final sequence where Rey is on the shore, you know, and across the ocean or whatever is the other world. And she, like, finds you, and you tells her that she has to keep living. And
as
she does.
The,
and
as then, the sickest song plays.
Oh, it's so cool. That's, like, that ending sequence is one of the most jaw-dropping cutscenes in any game I've ever played. Mm-hmm. And it is so... We'll talk about it, but it's really incredible. And that's basically it. Like, plot-wise, it's not... There's a bunch of... Like, kind of Fatal Frame 2, I think, especially. There's a lot of texture, and there's a lot of, like, if you wanted to plot out, like, literally the events of each thing, you could. But in terms of, like, basic plot, it's not especially complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any opening salvos on sort of the narrative here?
So I think it's safe to say that I'm a little bit cooler on this than you are.
yeah.
Which isn't to say I didn't like it. I think it's my favorite Fatal Frame that we've played.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my issues with it is that there's just a good 2 to 3 hours in this game that you could just take out and it would basically be the same game.
There's a lot of sections where you, like, especially kind of towards the middle part of the game,
mm-hmm.
where it's like you get, like, you play as Miku and you have to get 5 things in the manor, and then you play as Kai and you have to get 5 things in the manor.
Yeah.
And then you play as
Rey and you have to get 5 things. Yeah. I think if you take out Kai, the game would basically have the same impact. You could tell that they wanted to do stuff with 2 in this game, but it feels so compromised in what they actually had maybe time or resources for, I guess.
Yeah, it's also like kind of interesting that it's implied that the surviving sister of Fatal Frame 2 is in the manor, or I guess disappeared, maybe. But you don't get any. Well, you don't really see that. You get the Crimson Butterfly stuff.
Well, in the there's 2 endings of this game,
right?
And there's one where you can save Kai, and then Kai like introduces the 2 other protagonists to the other sister in that ending.
Right.
Okay. So I don't know. I feel like Kai. I don't know, like. My most cynical read is that they wanted to have a guy protagonist, and that's why they made him.
I did. It drove me because there's like a very light. It's not super strong, but there's like Miku can fit into places that the other two characters can't.
It's so stupid. I hate it.
And then Kai could like move stuff because he's strong and a man.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's like, I don't know, like, none of the stuff that he has to move is like, it's not like barbells.
It's like a dresser.
Yeah.
And like, how heavy is that dresser? There's no clothes in there. Come on now.
Yeah. Or you could take the drawers out. You know, like, I mean, not that you would want to animate that, but yeah, it's like very, it's weird.
Did not like that mechanic. I also did telegraph the attic thing early,
yeah,
like the crawl space thing early. So when she was like, you know, a smaller person could fit in this, I'm like, god damn it, fuck you. I'm gonna play as Miku and I'm gonna have to go in the fucking crawl space.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hate it. I think it would have been more interesting if you just played as the twin from 2.
I agree. About
the 3 protagonists going through grief. It just feels like a more interesting premise to me than the 2 protagonists. And then also there's like a 3rd dude that feels a little bit tacked on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I do really like the thing where he's, Yu keeps writing to, I mean, Kai keeps writing to Yu after he's dead, and Rei can't, like, bring herself to, like, tell him until she, like, calls her on the phone, right? That he's dead. I like that a lot. Like, just as a little character note and, like, little sort of sad thing that's kind of in the background of this. And I don't know if you get that with one of the two sisters, just because they're so young still, you know. I guess I don't know how long this takes place after Fatal Frame 2. It's not that long.
I don't think it's that long. I think it's clarified in one of the many documents you can read. But it's like less than a year, I think. So I guess we should talk about, like, structurally. This game has a very Fatal Frame, I'm sorry, Silent Hill 4 sort of narrative structure to it. Where, like, every level is, like, broken up by nights. And so, like, you're an apartment, you go to sleep, and then you're in the Fatal Frame mansion. And then you, like, complete the objective, and then you wake up, and then you do whatever objective you need to do during the daytime to trigger
the
nighttime section.
You develop photos, or, you know, talk to
investigate something in the apartment, or talk to Miku.
You can, like, give Miku photos that you find in the mansion, and she'll research them for you and then give you, like, little pickups and stuff. I think this is, like, I think this is such a cool, I think that sense of normalcy is, like, so, and I think it kind of, I don't know if this is part of what made the game scary for you, but I think it's so, like, that you go back and you're like, okay, like, things are mostly normal, and you do, of course, you get ghosts that visit the house, right? Like, of course that happens, but, like, especially at first, it's, like, pretty chill, and so you get this, like, alternating, like, thing, and then, you know, the two worlds blend together, and it never goes as far as it does in Silent Hill 4, where it's, like, now the apartment is an unsafe place to be, right? But it does, like, the way those sort of two spaces start to blend together, and I also love the kind of the claustrophobia of it, that, you know, Rei, like, never leaves her damn apartment. And so you're just there, or you're in the dream mansion, right? And that sort of interplay between that, I think, is really, really effective.
I think the first moment where I was like, oh, this game is doing things, is very early on, there's, like, another woman in the mansion with you. You, like, investigate her whole deal, and then you get this really extended cutscene of her, like, visiting this woman in a hospital, and then you see her, like, vanish right before your eyes, and it's sick as hell.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And then she's, like, starts haunting the apartment after that. And yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that happens outside of the mansion that just adds to everything. I really like anytime you answer the phone, and I think Silent Hill does the same thing. We're like, you just the hear ghosts yelling at you.
Yeah.
You pick up the phone and somebody's like, "Let me out! Let me out!" It's so funny. Like, it's spooky, but it's so funny every time to me.
It's good.
But I think the thing that was unsettling to me was, like, the stuff where, like, you go downstairs and you hear Miku doing the lullaby. It's like, like, hearing things and seeing things that would happen in the mansion, and then just having it in the apartment, as, like, Miku is also having these same dreams, but they don't really talk about it that much until it all comes to a head. And then Miku would just do things like you know, wake up in the middle of the night, stand in front of the doorway as it's raining and just sing the little like lullaby thing that they do.
Yeah.
That shit is creepy as fuck.
Yeah. Well, and it's also sort of a like, some of that stuff with Miku is like, does she know that she's doing it?
Yeah.
Almost, you know, there's like, the way they like don't talk to each other is like funny. Also kind of poignant to me, like that they're sort of, they're both having the same experience. And eventually they kind of recognize that they're both like going through a similar thing, but they like never talk about it for more than like 5 seconds. It's so like that sense of like loneliness and sort of like that feeling of both like, because like there's so many journal entries where Ray's like, she lost her dad. Just like me, you know, and that stuff. But like the sense of like you, the thing is so enveloping that it's so hard for you to like actually sort of bridge that gap. And then at the end of the game, like Rey is alone and she has to like fix this on her own, you know. And it's I just think that like sort of development of that stuff is really, really cool. Yeah, I also really like, what did you do when, because there's that sequence with Miku where her brother's ghost shows up and you can either like follow him down deeper into the abyss or you can like try and leave. And I think that same thing happens basically either way. But like the cutscenes that follow are like a little different. What did you do there?
I followed him because the guy said the cutscene was cooler if you did.
Yes, we used the same guide, I think.
it was a great cutscene.
Yeah,
not wrong.
Yeah,
Because you basically get Rey like chasing after her and being like, "Come back, please, don't go." Like, I'm also going through this shit. Don't leave me here.
Yeah. Oh,
it's good.
It's really good, yeah. I think that, like, I think that's one of the things that makes it so, like, kind of interesting and powerful to me is, like, the game is about, and I think it kind of, like, colors the past two games, especially number one, in an interesting light through this. But it's so much about, like, how grief is, like, a fundamental thing in life, right? And that there's no way you can sort of escape or avoid it, and there's this whole like ritual apparatus that like is about killing people right in order to kind of prevent this grief from happening or to try and trap it in some way, and it is the most useless shit in the world and only like extends the life of that grief and that like even further than it would be otherwise, right? I just think that's a really like lovely and rich and, you know, and sad and scary. Like it's just a really like rich vein of emotions to kind of pull from throughout. And I think the way that like, you know, all these stories that get told, like the various photographs you find and like in the mansion and sort of the central thing with the tattooed ghost and stuff is like, you know, kind of builds on that and also shows how different those things are. I think it's just such a like rich central ground that then the game expands on like really capably.
Especially if the further it goes on, like the characters are constantly pulled between wanting the dream to end, but also just wanting to die to be with the person that they're grieving over. And it's fucking good.
Yeah. No, it's such a, and I think the way, like, we didn't talk about this directly, but it, like the mansion, this doesn't play so much for Rey, but like the mansion has rooms that are in Fatal Frame 1 and 2. Like it is this like monster manor, this sort of shape-shifting dream thing. There is like a real place, right? Simultaneously, but that's sort of like the world that's created through your memories and the things that like then sort of get, it's just, it's such a like cool, that's the other thing, is it's such a cool central image that the game like hinges on and relies on. And that, you know, it becomes like, even though there is like, I think, excessive backtracking and like things like that in this game, it is mm-hmm. like a place that is cool to revisit over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think the mansion is way too big.
Yeah.
It just feels like two mansions cobbled together because it is.
Or like two and two other halves, or like one and two, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
One and a half and a half.
Yep. The backtracking, especially in the middle portion of the game, mm-hmm. is like excessive. I hate it.
Yeah.
But
although
good.
Because like our guy, I think the guy that we both used was like 100 find all the ghosts guide.
Yeah, I skipped all know? That shit.
Yeah. So I like did some of it. Because I have autism, and so when the things like you have like do this, I'm like, yeah, I have to do that.
No, I recognize how much of that stuff was optional, and I was like, skipping this.
Well, yeah, and I think also
at a certain point, I was like, all right, which rooms do I need to hit? And then I hit those rooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I eventually softened off of it as well, but. I think that did. Although the thing is, it did like shorten because the how long to beat's like 15 hours, and I hit like 12:30.
Yeah, I was like 12 as well.
Yeah, so it definitely helped shorten because I think there are a couple sections that are like kind of obtuse, and so if you're not looking at a guide, it would be not. It's not like impossible. I think that is one thing I wonder, I guess, about like if I were to play it without a guide, is how much I would get differently out of like. Because I think there's some parts where the game, there's like that one part where you have to go kill the like four carpenter ghosts.
Yeah.
There's so many of those little moments where you just run around different parts of the house. But like, and it shows you like a video, like there's a projector room and you put a video on and then it just shows like the room where each ghost is. And I was like, this game is expecting me to like remember what the rooms look like.
Yeah. Yep.
In a way that I do not, right?
Yeah.
And I don't, I sometimes wonder, is it just like, is it because I'm TikTok brained or like, or something? Or is it just like a reasonable expectation? If it was like, I just sort of wonder if I went into it sort of knowing that and like took notes about the mansion and stuff, maybe there would be this really sort of engaging like experience of like detectiving through each portion.
I don't think so. I think, but, okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm split on this because on one hand, I think having the objective be told to you through a grainy ass JPEG slideshow is like cool. I think if you're making a haunted house game and it's the PS2 era and like objectives, you don't get objectives on your HUD or whatever, and your way, all you give the player is like grainy like video of ghosts. I think that's cool in like I don't know, I just think that's cool and kind of good to like you've played this game for like 2 hours, you don't know what any of these locations are, but this is all we're gonna give you. I don't know. I think that's, I think that attentional obtuseness in like this dream world is like cool. But in terms of like finishing the game, it is an obstacle for that.
Yeah, for sure. I really don't know. Like, cause I just was like, I have to play this with a guide, or otherwise I'm gonna. Cause I was like, I meant to start like a week before I did, and it ended up working out fine. Like, actually, I was like, I was more worried about it than I needed to be, I think. But I was like, I'm really going to have to cram to like finish this on time. And, I would have started using a guide, I think, right? Like pretty early on, you know. Yeah. I don't think that's like a question. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I do feel like, because I like, again, yeah, I'm with you. I like especially the idea of you having to sort of know how the mansion works, you know, and understand the logic of it. to like get through it. Although I do think that the game could maybe be like a little more explicit about it, but I don't know. It's also a hard maybe thing to fully judge because I did experience it in this way where I was, you know, I wasn't thinking through it very much. I was just looking up the next thing I needed to do. Right.
Right. Yeah. How difficult did you find this game to be?
I found it pretty manageable. There were a couple sections that I thought were rough, but like I did save state a fair amount too. So there was very few things I ran into that was like, this is like a active obstacle to me finishing it. But there were things that I thought were a bit annoying. Right.
Yeah. The thing I had to learn, and I learned this pretty late, was it is just not feasible to exit the camera mode during an encounter.
Yeah.
To reposition. You just can't do this in this game because the ghost moves so fucking fast in this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's rough.
I guess you can reverse the sticks, and maybe I should have done that.
Yeah.
But I did like, because the first two games, I just like, I can't wrap my brain around like using the right stick to move or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. But this time I was like, I have to figure it out, you know? So I did. Right. Which was nice. I think it forcing you to, it is also very much a game that assumes that you've played at least one Fatal Frame prior.
Yeah.
Right. Like it is not messing around with that. It is not a good first entry. Yeah.
It is also the most like they know the conceit of the game and are able to get the most out of scaring you with the main mechanic of the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there's one ghost where like her attack is that, and I mean these are a lot of the game, but like her attack is like face first into you, and like her face is all like bloody and shit from like the eyes and the mouth and stuff.
Yeah.
That's scary, and you have to take a picture of that to win.
Right, and you have to be quick, and you have to sort of like that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's something we've both said on the prior to Fatal Frame podcast, but I just think the central thing of like you have to look at a fucked up thing and you have to like pay attention to the way it moves and like try and get it, you know, capture it, is like such a sort of compelling central horror loop, you know.
Yeah.
It's scary and it's also interesting, and like I do think that, yeah, like it's you maybe have to do it a little too much here. but I think it's such a cool, yeah, it just works and it still works here, you know.
I also just think the ghost design is way scarier in this game.
Yeah. Thing where the tattoos like appear when you get damaged by enemies,
it's so sick.
Yeah. I dropped my pen. And also like some enemies like will flash tattoos when they attack you and things like that, right? Is such a like, yeah, cool, unnerving thing.
Yeah. And that paired with like certain ghosts like you can't take down immediately. You just have to like run away from like the main ghost. Like you can't really do anything about her. You just kind of have to navigate your way around.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was one part of the game where I did get turned around, where I went upstairs instead of downstairs, basically. And I went into that like attic space with the little like poles that you have to run across. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do know what you're talking about.
And so I got screwed over because the tattooed ghost spawned in there. It would just attack me. And because you're like on the beams, your character moves slow. And I couldn't evade the attacks. So I was just getting caught by the tattooed ghost over and over again. Ended up using a bunch of potions and like one of the ones where like if you die, it automatically refills your health.
Yeah.
I burned so much of that shit in that room. Realizing that I had to go downstairs instead of upstairs. So I had to like backtrack and go through that again. And then exiting the room, the fucking stroller ghost came in and fucking swooped me.
Oh, that's brutal. And that is like the kind of thing that I think there's like a light sort of Metroidvania thing or Metroid search action thing to this game. And like knowing what ghosts are in certain areas or like or even like in the next night, oh, here's where I can get, an herbal medicine, or here's where I can get some film or whatever. Right, that like recurrence plays into it. I don't know what I would have done. God, I think Emma just walked back through the like, I'm in my office and there's a door open in the back, and Emma just walked across, and I was like, just taking a nap. So I was like, whoa, it's all good. We're all good. But yeah, like I think that sense of holisticness is really cool. And there's stuff like that in Fatal Frame 1 and 2, but I do think the sort of routine building of it, like helps that stuff sing a little bit better. But it is like, yeah, it also can result in like, what did you think of, the candle stuff, like in the back third?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I think one thing before that. I think the fact that, and this plays into it as well, like the fact that you have these items, like the camera stock and like the healing items, like that all is in the same place and it resets every night. And so like you can get into a routine of just like stocking up on everything you need for each night as you're doing the objectives. And then you get the game, like halfway through, has this mechanic where like the screen like turns into like black and white filter, and then the ghosts get like way more violent during like that phase. If you let there's like a blue candle you can pick up, and if that runs out, then it kind of activates this mode. But then that filters into like this kind of sub mechanic of like making your rounds through the different places in the mansion, and so you always know where certain things are. Like coming out of like the kimono room, you know that there's a dresser and it's always gonna have like a health potion, and then sometimes the game like puts a ghost there to fuck with you because it knows that you're gonna check for it to get the healing thing, and that's like fucked. The candle mechanic's interesting. I was pretty okay about making sure I had enough candle stuff to last. But I did think it was interesting, especially because the effect that they use is like really fucking cool.
Yeah.
This like grainy black and white, kind of like silhouetted look to it, I guess. I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
Well, it's such a like, because there are parts that kind of use a similar effect, I think, in 2 and 1, where it's like you go into like an especially fucked up room where there's like a messed up ghost, and there it'll be in black and white. Or there's like the thing in Fatal Frame 2 where you have the enemy that chases you, and I think whenever she showed up. Right. But I like that kind of sense of having to like maintain normalcy and like having to sort of like there were times where it's like, okay, I just like, you know, it's the beginning of the night, so my candle is topped off, right? And then I walk into the next room and there's a candle there, and you're like, okay, well, I don't want to use that because, you know, I'm just gonna like burn quicker. I want to save it, but like, when am I gonna come back to this room? You know, and things like that. I think adds a like a nice dimension to it. The visual effect is so cool, and it's nice that they still deploy it. Like when you go like into the abyss, you know, there is some stuff where it just shows up again, or in the final boss fight, it, there's like sections that are in that sort of style, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I think I don't know. I feel like I'm underselling it a little bit because, like, not only is it black and white, but it's also like there's like, it's like overexposure when there's like a light source and stuff like that. It looks sick. It looks sick as hell.
Yeah. Well, it's also so like the game's already so dark, right? Like dark enough that like I was lucky that this week it was cloudy a lot. And so I could play in the daytime sometimes. But if it was bright out, it was like, I can't see anything. I can't play it. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then when it kind of switches that black and white mode, the shadows get longer. The sort of the contrast is higher. Like, as you said, there's less gradient. And so it becomes like it's easier to read things into shapes. It's just, yeah, it's a really nice, like creepy effect. And I mean, this is like my thing when it comes to like visual horror media, but like I thought it was really cool that the central thing that like really fucks up Rika the ghost, you know, is that she watched Kaname die and that there's sort of this thing of like sight playing into that. And there's also like all this camera, you know, I mean, obviously the camera stuff is like baked into the game, but there's all this like projector old film stuff and like the sort of obsession with those apparatuses or the apparati of like seeing and sight and like working through that stuff is also like just cool. Is like an interesting vein, especially in a game where like shooting is killing, right? Shooting film, right? Shooting on a camera. You know, like really leaning into the sort of like connotations of that, and the way that like that stuff kind of gets documented or like exposed, no pun intended, on film is really interesting.
For sure. You want to talk about the final boss fight?
Yeah, which is both like sick as hell, like so cool. And also, like, a super pain in the ass.
Yeah, but... Yeah, you go into the shrine area. And first of all, like, the area that you're in... basically, the end of this game is that you do the summoning ritual from Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, true.
And so you're, like, in this, like river area fighting this like ghost, and she has like this like ghost friend with her, and like does like attacks on you. It's the actual like set piece is sick as hell.
Yeah, well, there's also the thing that's both like cool and because there's all this like looping dialogue and stuff. She's like saying these things over and over again. And like, and that stuff's like really creepy. And then sometimes she'll like go into, it'll switch to the black and white. And if she touches you, you die, which is obviously like really annoying. It's not that hard to avoid, but like, you know, you really have to kind of be on it and like know what direction you're running in and stuff. But it switches to that black and white. And then it's like the, like, I don't remember what she says. It's like fixed in my eye. Something like that over and over again is so like scary. I also think that central thing of like the like shrine that's down there, the little kind of squat building, and in there is just all these dead like preserved tattooed bodies of all these women, is like such a like, ugh, like horrible, beautiful, terrible image, right? It's like a pretty good thing to have as the last thing in your horror game, you know?
For sure. Yeah, but the boss can insta-kill you, and it's just so annoying. Yeah,
luckily, it's like, because I think there's sometimes in Fatal Frame where something can insta-kill you and the stone mirror, like, doesn't work, which is the item that regens you, if you die. And so, but I save stated, and I was very glad that I did, because it's just like, it just, well, and also, I got way more Zero and 61 film as, Kai, and so at the end and so as Rei, I had just like only 14, which is like, you know, so that was the part of it was just that it was like taken forever, you know. And I think that kind of like thing where it's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't, like, conceptually, the like, maybe I should pick up this film because I want another character to use it, is like a really cool idea, right? But you can't tell what the items are before you use them. And the guy didn't really say like, hey, maybe you should wait for Ray to pick this up or whatever. So it just like, I used too much 61 earlier in the game and then it was just like gone. And then that last boss battle was like especially long. But the thing is, it wasn't that bad because it was like, I mean, literally like I played just that, like the, you know, leading up to the boss battle and then watched the last cutscene last night. And so it was like, it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm at the end of a 2-hour session and I just want to finish the game. And I'm like running into this problem. It's just like, oh, like I just got to deal with this and it's not so bad, you know? But under the right circumstances could be incredibly grating. The part where the little priestess ones like attack you while you're on the beams at the end, there's like two of them. That's so annoying. You don't need to do that. It's
God, that was annoying. Annoying as hell. Yeah. I also safe stated the hell out of that final boss fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it was, it was just, conceptually it's fucking dope. And then like when she grabs you, she like, it's not like menacing. She just like hugs you.
Yeah.
It's sick. It's cool.
Yeah. Well, I think that thing of like commonality, I think because it's like the Kuze shrine, right? And so there's like the Kuze family head ghost who shows up occasionally. It's like a recurring boss battle. And it's like, why did you bring a man into the shrine? You know?
Yeah.
And stuff. And like, that's just like a bad ghost. That ghost just bad. It's just an evil ghost, you know? But like Reika is just like, she is a victim of both this grief and like this, the manor and all this stuff as much as you are. And it's just like, you know, the circumstances of like this sort of intense situation that like lead you to fight each other. And so there's like that, that sense of like at once companionship and closeness and also terror and distance is like really strong, especially like as like the deeper you get into the manor and the more, you know, the more you resemble her. Right. The more your body transforms into what she is. Right. It's such a like cool back and forth, you know, and I think it's like it's a really potent and powerful image like throughout the game. And then the boss battle like expands capably on that, which is really impressive. It's not easy to do, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that it like goes completely black and white, and then she grabs you, and like both of you have the tattoo effect on.
Yeah,
it just looks amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a good looking game, generally.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, I guess this is kind of a different tack. How did you feel about the cutscene direction generally as compared to 2?
I liked the stuff outside of the mansion I really liked a lot, as mentioned earlier. There's one really good one where she wakes up and she gets grabbed by a ghost who's staring at her from her bedside, and that's so fucking scary.
When you look into Miku's room and see like the tattooed woman and a bunch of ghosts like standing over her.
Oh my gosh. But all the stuff when you like enter the mansion, when you go to sleep, I thought it was fine. I thought 2 was a little bit better about like mixing in like weird cut-ins and like noises and stuff on the cutscene. But I mean, it wasn't bad by any means. I just thought 2 was a little bit better in terms of the direction of like that, like kind of spooky cutscene stuff, I guess.
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, I think I agree. I thought that like the, I just think the cutscene work in 2 is just so incredible. Like it's really, it's like, I don't know. It's like Silent Hill 2, number 1, Silent Hill 3, number 2, Fatal Frame 2, right? Of like all the games we play, right? It's like up there. Alway 2 is maybe like 5 there, 4 or 5. I don't know. Anyway, we should do a special episode where we do like an Oscars for survival horror and do like different awards. That would be fun. Anyway, so I was like, I felt, and maybe it's just because it's like a lot of it, because there's those sequences when you go into the mansion, when you start to dream, and it's like these sort of intercut, like you see the mansion outside snowing, and then it cuts to like a ghost, and it cuts to people doing a ritual, then it cuts to the manor outside again, right? That's very like Fatal Frame 2. Mm-hmm. But maybe partially the routine of it, or sort of, I was not impressed with it, as impressed with it generally, like I definitely agree. Yeah. I just think part of it is it's just my shit, the central thing of like people in separate circumstances who are like connected by this weird thing and have to come together, like Wachowski shit. Mm-hmm. Right? That's, I like that. You know, I really like mm-hmm. Cloud Atlas, okay? The book specifically, not so, I mean, well, I like the movie too. But and like Tale for the Time Being, the I think Ruth Osaki novel, that's really good and has sort of, you know, it's not really a horror novel at all, but like has, you know, people in different circumstances who are connected in this like strange way, right? And especially through like photography or through books, like literature kind of being a central thing, like that text moving through time and being reinterpreted, like all this stuff that's kind of in the mix of Fatal Frame 3 is just like stuff I eat up. And so that's definitely like, even though it's like, oh, I'm not as sensorily compelled as, you know, by this as I was by Fatal Frame 3, it's like the sort of mix of things to like think about and experience in that is like more potent to me than what Fatal Frame 2 was putting down, I guess.
Yeah. This is basically the best ending any of these games have had for me.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because 2 also has a really good ending.
Oh, it's I rewatched it. It's incredible. Both of them are good. Even the good ending, like the sort of redone good ending is quite good. They're great.
But the thing that does it for me is, I mean, we talked about like her like going up to you and like that conversation is, and you is basically like, you have to live, like fuck off.
Yeah.
Let me go. And like he like absorbs the tattoo and whatever.
Yeah.
And then just leaves. The thing that I love about it is like, she wakes up, realizes that she doesn't have the tattoo anymore. And like it does like an establishing shot of like, it's not raining anymore and people are like outside and the birds are chirping, but like she is still like overcome with this grief and like starts crying because like she is like further away from you than she has ever been throughout this whole game. And she just cries about it, and it's so good.
Yeah, I think this is like, I really want to talk about the ending cutscene generally, but I also think something that's really lovely about this game is that it is about an adult woman. And that it's like about an adult woman also going, you know, going through grief and like going through grief for a romantic partner that is a man, right? Like really genuinely novel material for a video game. Right. Which is maybe kind of a backhanded compliment, but like it's so refreshing and it is very like emotionally and capably handled here. That's such an effective. I love that whole last cutscene. That one of the establishing shots in that sequence is like the reflection of her like cabinet and the window. That's, I don't know, there's something about that that just gets me. It's so beautiful. And I think, that like, because it's such a like, you get the fucking shredding guitar anime AMV song.
It's during so that sequence. Good.
And then it, you know, and then it's like the daytime and it's like quiet again and she's just crying to herself. Right. It's just so like.
It's so good.
Ugh.
Yeah. No, when that cutscene on the lake. As like. You know, as all of the spirits are like going towards the other side of the shore, because the whole thing with like the lullaby is like, you know, putting the priestess to sleep so that everybody can go across the shore and like, you know, casting spirits into the afterlife thing. And then she sees you and then runs after her. And then like her tattoos get stronger she's running towards him. And then the song kicks in. And then it like crescendos. it like climaxes as like he's talking to her and taking away the tattoos. That's fucking video games, dude. That's gaming. I love that. It's so, good.
Well, it's also such a like, because the early part of that cutscene, it's like her standing on the shore and it's kind of, it's almost in black and white. Like she's wearing a blue blouse. And so there's that little color, but then it's just this like expanse of like still ocean, you know? Mm-hmm. And then all the ghosts coming out, which are all except you, like kind of formless and just silhouettes and stuff. It's just this very like minimalist kind of framing, right? And is so like kind of I don't know, distant or sort of like restrained. And then that being paired with like this ripping ballad, right? Is like yes. That is, it's such a video game thing to do. But it hits so hard. It's so cool. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. And it really just like brings out the melodrama so much.
Yeah.
In that moment. It's great. Mm-hmm. I love it.
It's fantastic. Yeah. No. I mean, yeah. And part of it may be just that like I was really, you know, I played that ending sequence and I'm like, yeah, that's what video games are all about.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But yeah, I just think it's cool. I think this is a game you could really write about in like a really serious way, you know, and spend serious time digging into, and there would be rewarding stuff at the end. And I think that's also part of it is like, even though we talked a little bit about how the Fatal Frame 2 stuff is not great, but like,
yeah, I think the thing with two is like the sort of like lack of like character work kind of hurts it, I think. But like this is a little bit more broad in subject matter, so it helps it a little bit, I think, here.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just like gonna... a broad expression of grief.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, and I also think it's like this is such a cool sequel, you know, that feels really engaged with, and particularly like, cause we talked a little bit in Fatal Frame 1 and maybe I was being ungenerous, but I remember being sort of like, I'm really kind of think it's weird that the conclusion of this game is like, oh, this girl still has to like suffer forever to like keep the demons at bay. And that's like the solution. And I think the way this game kind of throws a big lampshade on that stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And sort of like, there's all this sort of ritual apparatus that's all sort of like tied in together. And it's all stuff that like just can't prevent human suffering and it can't prevent these kinds of things from happening. It explicitly doesn't do it, you know? And so, and it does like, I guess it does kind of come back around, like you said, cause you know, the priestess does go to sleep, but it's like her being able to let go. Right. It's not about her, you know, being the suffering that not being the child, the kid in, you know, Amalias or whatever, right? Like suffering so everyone else can have a good time, right? It's like we all have to pass through this gate together and we all have to stand at the shore and watch the people we love depart before we do, you know? Mm-hmm. And we have to like accept that. And I think that's such a cool, like thematic thing to tie the rest of the stuff into. And it feels like it really earns that sort of like, because it's, you know, it's exactly the kind of thing where you know, you'd like if it was a movie and you just saw on Twitter, it's like, oh yeah, there's Fatal Frame 2 stuff in, you know, in the next Fatal Frame movie. And people might be like, I don't know if I want that. Like, I don't know if I, you know, that's such a great ending. Like, don't iterate on that. And I think this does like a really good job of like justifying coming back to both those games. Right. Mm-hmm. Even if like the execution isn't always 100% there.
Yeah. 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 Just refocusing on, yeah, refocusing it to be about what happens after a shrine thing happens to you, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really,
no, it's cool.
It's yeah, a really smart way of building upon that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have no fucking clue how they make more of these.
I don't know either. We'll find out. I mean, I think whatever the Wii one we're going to play next is like kind of a reset as well.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, just in the way that Fatal Frame 2 is from 1, right? It's just like new ghosts, new, you know, stuff going on. Same format, but like a different, slightly different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I agree. I don't know how you like keep iterating on this. It feels like such a like nice, it's such a nice thing together, the three games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, also I was going to say, we didn't talk about this earlier, and this is just unrelated and like a game thing. What did you think about like every person having their own individual point pool and like having special abilities that their camera has that the other two people don't have?
Thought it was fine. The point system feels more generous, but
yes, that's definitely true.
I think it's because there's multiple protagonists, so you kind of need that. Thought it was fine.
I feel similarly that it's like it doesn't take away, but I don't think it really contributes either.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like hard to remember like what does what. Oh, I did kind of like that, like at first Kai is the one who has to like hide from ghosts and shit, you know, because he mm-hmm. doesn't have the camera to start. It's not like a super compelling like game thing, but I kind of like it. At least like we talked about the gender stuff being dumb and stupid earlier, but I like that the women are confront the ghost right away and he has to hide. Is mm-hmm. like, you know, that's nice. And also he can't like charge his camera as much or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, but it like it doesn't really, I don't think any of that stuff like really like, oh, it feels different to play as this character versus this character.
No.
It's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Fatal Frame. Gaming baby.
But yeah, I love this game. I adored this. I'm excited to try 4 and we'll see what's cooking, but this is it's gonna be tough to beat this for me.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, one of those games where like I'm glad I played it. I never want to play it again because it was tough to get through. Mostly,
mm-hmm.
once I started repeating ghosts and stuff, I was like, all right,
I sure. got it now. Yeah,
because
you were talking about how the like crawl and stuff was really freaking you out, right? Or
that, yeah, I was thankful that there was only one attic ghost. Thankfully,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And once you fight that ghost, you kind of get the thing. I think most of this game is like once you like fight it once, it's like, all right, cool. I understand what the scare is. Now I know what to expect, I guess.
Yeah,
because mm-hmm. there's some ghosts that can fuck you up and are super annoying to fight.
Yes, that's true. Ugh.
Like that one ghost who like warps around and like shoots beams at you or whatever.
Oh, she throws her hair at you is what that is.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, because she has it like stapled to the wall too. I don't remember what her deal is exactly.
Right. Yeah. No, that one was annoying. That one had me being like, I don't know what happened to you, but he probably deserved it because you're annoying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then, oh man, there's that part where like you go down the hallway and you turn back and that fucking guy with the knife charges at you.
Oh yeah.
Man.
Oh yeah. God, that guy is scary.
Yeah. Man. That part is rough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's cool. I think it's also like, I played Haunting Ground this month, which I think we will cover on the show at some point. Which is a game that's like the opposite of this in that it is about running away. And you have like a dog, and eventually you get like a bunch of like items you can use to sort of fight enemies and things, but mostly it's just like you can hide and you can run and, you know, and you can like tell your dog to bite him, and that's like what you can do. Right. And I think there was like, cause with Amnesia, there was sort of a period where it was kind of like, you know, like so many horror games have combat, and like through combat they don't become scary because like the threats are not meaningful. And like it's really scary if you like have to run away from stuff, right? And I think And I mean, I really like Haunting Ground. I hope we'll do an episode on it because I think it's really cool and it's doing really interesting things. It's like this very like psychosexual game in a way that's really fascinating. I think Fatal Frame 3 is like a compelling example. And I honestly think Silent Hill is as well, but the Fatal Frame games are just a good way of showing like how you can make combat and like being, even when you were able to like defeat enemies, how you can make that scary. Right. Mm-hmm. And I do think you do, like, I think it's true that like you only have so much tape on that. And if the game goes on for long enough, it's like, you're going to start to run out on it. Right. But it's a way of I think it can be scary to confront something, you know, as much as it can be scary to have to run away from something.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Lullabies are scary. The fucking song that they chant over and over again.
Yeah, it's scary.
Creepy. Especially since you load up the game for the first time, and that's like the first thing you hear in the background. Yeah. And then when you pause the game, there's like a kid counting up to 10 over and over again.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Man, I hate that shit. I hate it. When there's a kid being menacing.
Yeah, I think that's something that's also really impressive about the localization. I mean, having not heard what it sounds like in Japanese, but I do think all the audio stuff is really capable, too.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so it's nice that like that there was a lot of attention and care given to that. You know, because it's such an important part of the game. And it's good to have it like be so centralized and so much care given to it.
I did think the dude that is like the head of like the whole thing, that the one that he's the guy that charges at you.
Yeah,
he like occasionally says some stuff. He does.
Why
sound
did
like
you
this,
let a man into the Kuze Shrine?
He does kind of sound. He does kind of sound like the Soul Calibur announcer to me.
Hey, it could be the same guy. Who knows? Somebody.
But yeah. Overall, the voice direction is crazy good.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Also, great game to play along with Pulse. So.
Yeah.
We nailed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Video game.
Should we go to questions?
Yeah, we do have one from Jen. Questions at spookygame.club.
Yes.
This is the email address where you can send in questions. This one is from Jen. Why do you think horror stories set in dreams are so effective? Is it because the rules of the natural world no longer apply and anything could happen? Or is it because you're no longer safe in your most vulnerable state?
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think what scares me about this game is that interplay between normalcy and that like routine of like being up in the night and then having to like live in the day and try to be normal in the day.
Yes.
Right. I think that's like a really nice sort of central thing. And so I think it is about vulnerability. You know, it is about that kind of like, and it's also something I think that's really kind of foundationally relatable. Like, you know, not all of us have had like genuinely sort of traumatic experiences with violence or sort of scary things happening to us. Right. But all of us have had bad dreams, you know, and the idea of that, like really bleeding into your life is scary. You know, it obviously happens, to be clear, like people, you know, but it's just, yeah, I think it's an effective sort of foundation for this stuff.
I think there's an intimacy to dreams when you have them. And then when you are confronted with that in real life, it takes on a fright. It's like a violation of something that you thought was yours.
Totally.
I am a broken record, I guess, but like, one of my favorite things about Firewalk with Me is Laura having these dreams and then having that protrude into real life. One of the scariest scenes in that movie is when the old woman like walks up to her and says, like, the man behind the mask is under the fan or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And she just, Laura, like, knows what that means, even though it doesn't make any sense because she's had this, like, experience that she's very intimately aware of. Mm-hmm. And just having, like, random people come up to you and I'd be able to identify that is, like, fucking scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's what works with me there, and also what works with me here is, like, when you wake up and hear your roommate do the chant that you've been hearing in your dreams, it's fucking scary.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, 100%. And I think that is, like, yeah, again, I think it's relatable in some way. Like, I've definitely had dreams where it, like, fucks me up the next day and it's, like, hard for me to do things and be feel normal, you know? Yeah, great question, Jen. Thank you so much for writing in. Yeah, what are we playing next time?
We're gonna do something completely different. As
hell yeah,
as we want to do, I guess. Next month, we're going to be playing the Silver Case, the Suda 51 Grasshopper Games visual novel. That originally came out on the PlayStation in 1999.
Hell yeah. Yeah, and it's on Steam.
And got remastered and ported to new consoles. It's on PS4. It's on Steam. It's on Switch. So yeah, very excited to play this.
Yeah. No, I'm excited too. And I think it'll be nice to play a visual novel after, like, yeah. I think this is just a nice cadence that we've developed here. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, we're excited.
Yeah. Well, should we do plugs? I don't think we got anything else to chat about in terms of the show.
No. You can find the podcast at spookygame.club. We have links to our Discord, our, you know, RSS feed, where you can subscribe to the podcast. You can rate us on iTunes. We've had a couple of 5-star reviews, which is very nice.
That's very nice. Thank you.
And yeah, join our Discord. We've got some folks hanging out there from our new Patreon show, Closet Crit. And yeah, if you want to hear the Patreon shows, we got them on the Patreon page that you can also find at spookygame.club. We have multiple shows at this point.
Yeah.
We have... I keep wanting to call it Frame Narrative, but it's found footage where we watch horror movies once a month. We recently did Pulse, like we mentioned, but we've also covered stuff like Alucarda, Us, stuff like that.
Yeah.
We have Handheld Talk, which is me and Amr talk about handheld video games and just games broadly, just... very casual podcast about video games.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's such a fun show.
And then you have Closet Crit.
Talk
about Closet Crit?
Yeah, I do. So Closet Crit is a show I do with Soph, who is one of my very, very close friends. And we just read, like, some theory or some philosophy. We had ambitions to do books, but I think we're going to do articles because we talk a lot and it just feels a little bit manageable for us. We've read some Walter Benjamin. Last time we read some Georges Bataille. I don't know how to pronounce his French ass name. We just called him George on the show. It's really fun and funny and goes off the rails frequently. Soph is really good at asking me questions that make me laugh and get me to pontificate, and I think they always have really interesting stuff to say. I really like the show. I'm really proud of what we've done so far, and yeah, I think you should sub. It's $3 a month to get all this great stuff, and listen to that and found footage and Handheld Talk.
Yeah. All right. I'll hand it over to you for the rest of the plugs.
Yeah. So yeah, as mentioned before, you can email us questions at spookygame.club. I'm We're also hosted on the Admiral Mapping Network. And we're on social media, mostly on Twitter. I think we have a co-host account, I think, but it's not very active. And you can find me on Twitter at @Grace_Machine. I'm also on Blue Sky and co-host, I think, at @Grace-Machine. I'm also right now, I alluded to this last time, but right now I'm running a Kickstarter for a collection of my essays on video games and religion called Killing Our Gods. Right now we're like $500 away from hitting our goal, which is really exciting. It's a collaboration with my another dear friend, Gina Fowler, who is a book artist. And so each book, there's ebook copies. So it's like, if you can't afford like a $40 book, that makes sense. But like, also she's going to hand bound all the copies and hand make them. It's going to be like this really beautiful object and hopefully have good words for you to read in it as well. And it's also, we're both ex-Mormon and grew up it and like went to safe school and stuff. So we have this like long history together of like kind of dealing with these kinds of things. So it's, I think it's meaningful to me, and I know it's really meaningful to them to be working on this together. So sorry for the hard plug at the end, but that's what I got going on. Rose, do you want to talk about your social media stuff and anything else?
You'll find me at bluestrose430. That's it.
Sick. That's great. Yeah. Follow Rose, IMO. we'll catch you next time with the silver case.